Welcome back to the Build Your First Microsoft BI Solution with SQL Server 2008 R2 training course. In this presentation, Peter Meyer is going to drill down and show you some specific query techniques for writing queries using the MDX query syntax supported by SQL Server Analysis Services.
Thank you, Roger. So how did we define MDX in the prior presentation?
Mind-destroying expression.
So welcome back to the session on mind-destroying expressions, formerly known as multidimensional expressions.
Yes.
All right. But to beginners, I will confess, it might hurt the brain a little bit, but I'm confident that by the end of this session, there's going to be a little less pain.
I'm going to demystify it for you.
All righty. So we're going to review the select statement. We'll take a look at what it means to define query axes that are based on sets. So we have to bring in some set understanding. We'll look at the slicer axis, which is defined by a tuple. What do you say, tuple?
Tuple, tuple.
I actually use
potato,
both.
Potato, tomato, yeah. Tomato.
We'll talk about this. There's a whole, it's not controversial, but where we say tuple or tuple, sort of depends. Means the same thing, though. So once we've defined the slicer axis, we have to actually know what a tuple or tuple is, and we'll explore what that is and how you define them. And then we'll look at using the cell properties clause, and then we'll talk about how we introduce calculations into the query. So we have seen this slide in the previous presentation that presented to us the basic syntax for the select statement used to query the cube. And essentially, the cube query is bringing back a multidimensional result set. So the way that we define that in our query writing is our select clause consists of a comma-separated list of axes. Those axes are based on sets, and so we have to talk about how we actually define those sets. The from is very straightforward. It comes from a cube, and the where uses a tuple, some cell coordinate that then slices across the cell set that's being produced by the intersection of the sets. All right, so defining the query axes, place a set on an axis. The axis is either columns or zero. All right, columns is an alias for the zero axis. We often call it columns. And for the second axis that we introduce is known as the rows, or it can be called the one axis. Beyond that, you can specify up to a total of 128 axes, but it's extremely unusual that you would do so. All right, do appreciate that cube space is very sparse. Do you know that if we have dimensions of product and date and customer, you don't expect, if you could visualize the intersection of that cell space, that every customer on every day purchases the product or every product. So the fact is, if you could visualize it, there'd be very few numbers in that enormous cell space. Mm-hmm. So the fact is that when we bring back sets, and we bring back the cell sets at the intersection of these sets, there's a lot of sparse space. And so the non-empty keyword can be used to prefix in front of the set to say that if the entire axis, so for example, the entire column or the row is empty, omit it from the result that comes back. So it's quite common that that is used in your query writing. So how do we define these sets? Well, explicitly, you can select members from hierarchies, and you can then include them within the Bracey notation. So for example, if we have from our measures dimension, the sales amount member, and the order quantity, we would just comma separate them and put them within braces. Okay, a word about the square brackets here. It's very, very common in MDX that we put square brackets around everything that represents a dimension, hierarchy, level, or member. And the reason for this is you can never be sure, because they're all derived from your data, that we don't have a customer that happens to have the same name mm-hmm. as a reserved word.
Right.
For example, a customer called from or select or where.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual, but you know those things seem to happen. So what we do is we always put things in square brackets. The other thing is that our member names typically have embedded spaces too. Whereas if you recall, it's often considered a bad practice in relational design that we have tables or columns that have embedded spaces. That while you can do it, we frown upon it. Yet here, because we expect user-friendly results coming from the cube, that's the other reason we have those square brackets. So that's the explicit approach. Just select the members from hierarchies, comma separate them, put them in braces. There is a little rule here that if you only have one member, you can omit the braces. It's a laziness, and you can just specify that member. And internally, the server is expecting a set, so it will convert it to one. Now, it's quite common that your sets are going to be dynamically resolved. So we can achieve that in a number of ways. And common ways are that we can go to a dimension, a hierarchy, or a level of a hierarchy, and we can request the members of it. So the example here is that from the date dimension and its calendar hierarchy and the year level of that hierarchy, give me all of the members. The children works as well. So when we think of a hierarchy, members, they have parents and they have children beneath them. So the date.calendar.year and the 2008 calendar year member If we request its children, assuming that the quarter is the next level, we'd expect to get a set of four members being Q1, 2, 3, and 4. Now, other approaches for the dynamic is that we have numerous set functions. So I'm not going to talk about all of them, but some common ones would be filter. Pass in a set, use an expression, I'm only interested in the customers that have sold more than $50,000 or purchased more than $50,000. Another common one would be descendants. Mm. So for this member, CY2008, I want all of the members at the date level. In other words, I want the 366 days within that year. And that would return a set of all of the members at that level. Order allows you to order sets by some expression. Top count is another good one. I'm interested in the top selling products by profitability. So the top count expects a set to be passed in. I pass all of my products in. I request the top number that I want, give me 10, and then I use an expression. And internally, that function will then evaluate the members with that expression, sort them in a descending way, and give you the top N that you've requested. So commonly, I find that set functions are achieved through members or going direct to the set functions. And here we have the top count example. I know this seems a little odd. Why do we repeat salesperson three times? Mm-hmm. But when you think of the structure of the cube, from dimension to hierarchy to level of hierarchy, we're really requesting all of the members at a particular level of that hierarchy. They are all candidates for the top count. Internally, this function will order them in descending order according to their sales, and it will return a set of the top five. So defining the query axes, here's an example where our select, on the columns we've got the two measures, sales amount and sales amount quota, and then we're requesting all of the members from the year level of the calendar hierarchy of the date dimension on the rows. The non-empty is here is saying that if we have empty years, possibly for future years that are already in the dimension, like 2011, 12, and 13, we don't have any sales for yet. So if that row is entirely empty, do not return it in the cell set. And that's what we see down here. Okay, so the sets define the cube space that's going to be returned. And what we can do is slice across this by the slicer axis. This is what our where clause will do. So it represents the slicer axis. It is totally optional, but it's common that it's introduced. It behaves as a hidden query axis, and it is defined by a single tuple. And the tuple cannot include hierarchies that are already used in the query axis. So let's introduce these tuples. They're a multidimensional coordinate. All right, and it does help to think of Excel at this point. We're in a cell. It's governed, uniquely represented through its column, its row, and its sheet within the workbook. That's a multidimensional coordinate. Mm-hmm. Within this sheet, and this column, and this row, that's how you uniquely define this. It just so happens that cubes with multiple hierarchies are actually much more complex. But what it comes down to is that if you can uniquely lock in a member for each interacting hierarchy, then you have isolated an atomic cell of the cube. All right. So, if it consists of more than one hierarchy, each member is separated by a comma. Otherwise, you can have it stand alone. We'll see in just a moment. It comes up, how do you pronounce this? Is it tuple or is it tuple? Take your pick. And I actually find, and I've been picked up on this, I use both. It just depends on what I'm saying at the time.
Because you're fickle.
I'm fickle. I'm a precisionist. And I accept that there are two different pronunciations. So let's go back to geometry. We're probably familiar with this in mathematics way back. But here we've got an example that in geometry, the point 3 is simply the point 3. But in a cube, this point, if we have a single dimension, is 2007 March. All right, so there's point 3. That's the way we would lock it in a cube. Unusual that a cube would have one dimension. There's not much value in that. So let's move up to two dimensions. And so what we've got here is that in geometry, we can use, I'm a little out of sequence there, we just comma separate them and place them in parentheses. So at 3, 2 is where we isolate this space. In a cube then, and in this sense, a result that has date and category, we isolate this cell by requesting both of those members. And the point here is that order doesn't matter. I could have said bikes and 2007 March. It would still isolate it for me. In geometry, it's a little more picky. We have conventions about X, Y, and Z, right? Mm. Three dimensions. Okay, in this case, down here, we've now introduced not just date and category, but also sales territory. So I have North America and Europe. So again, if I can lock in the coordinates for each of those hierarchies, then I can isolate a single cell. And we could keep doing this, but there's a pattern we can pick up from here, and that is four dimensions, you need to lock in four members of the hierarchies, and five, six, and seven. And in English, we refer to these as quadruple, quintuple, sextuple, septuple, and that's where we come up with tuple. It essentially is a list of members from different hierarchies separated by commas and enclosed in parentheses with the aim of isolating a cell within the cube.
Okay. Slightly overloaded term then, right?
Slightly overloaded? Yes. In what way?
Well, there's a relational concept of a tuple as well, right?
They're related, but I couldn't comment how.
Yes.
Probably out of scope for this presentation, so I'll talk to you about
we'll
it later.
We'll have to get Mr. Cod and Mr. Date to come in and comment on that, right?
But I'm sure it's still a coordinate.
Yeah.
So understanding complete and partial tuples. So a complete tuple says that for the cube space, every hierarchy that interacts with your measures has an explicit member locked in. And that's going to isolate a single cell. But you can use partial tuples, which says that you're only specifying some of them. What it will do then with those that you don't specify is it will use the query context. That the sets that you have in the select clause will then be used to construct the missing parts. And the absence that the sets in the query are not introducing it, then the default member that the cube has. Mm. And default member can be governed by defaults that are explicitly defined by the developer. For example, you can use dynamic defaults with MDX that say the current year is the year that we default on the year dimension. But in the absence of an explicit default, the first member on the hierarchy then becomes the default. And the first member almost always is the all member at the top of the hierarchy. So in effect, if you do not introduce a hierarchy into your tuple, it usually defaults back to the all, which says it's not filtering by it, which is what we'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So every cell in the query derives its tuple from the query context, or failing that, whether it's the query axis or the slicer axis. If it hasn't been, the hierarchy hasn't been introduced there, the default member from the cube is going to be substituted in for the rest. So specifying members in a tuple, it could be a constant. I want sales amount in my tuple. Or you could use the current member, in which case you simply omit it. The context of the query is going to use the current member. Or it could be a function based on the current member. For example, we would like to look at the current member, but the previous member of it. And this is the beauty of the inbuilt relationships or understanding between members in hierarchies and hierarchies and dimensions and measure groups, mm-hmm. is that the relationships are all understood. So we can use these navigations to say, well, just give me the previous member. Or give me the parent and the first child of it. And that'll take me to the first period of the prior time period. And it's actually quite intuitive, and you get the hang of it usually quite quick. All right. So what that does is we now have these sets that define our cube space, and we're able to slice through that by introducing other hierarchy members. That even though we don't see color on the columns or rows, our where clause introduces it as a tuple, which ensures that the coordinates are locked in for the particular color that we're requesting. All right, that constructs the query. We then introduce the cell properties. And this is used to retrieve properties that decorate the cells. The two that are there by default, in fact, it is optional, but the cell properties by default will be value and formatted value. And the cube developer goes to the effort of using a format string to say how numerics should be represented. Should they be percentages, comma separated, and so on.
And a good analysis services client will pick that up.
Correct. Yeah. In fact, all of them will, because the default behavior in not including cell properties, formatted value comes back and will be what's presented in all query results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other cell properties that can be delivered, for example, colors and font names. In fact, it's a very rich definition within the cube, and we have great control as developers to control what the client should do to represent that value. Should it be red with a yellow background? Well, if it makes sense, we can do that. And so if it's important for your client application to retrieve this extra data, you do need to introduce the cell properties and then comma separate the properties you need. Now, the moment you introduce cell properties, the default of value and formatted value won't be there. You have to explicitly include it.
Mm.
All right. So, next topic is where it starts to get a little more interesting, because in relational querying, when you think about it, if I have a column that says that I have sales and cost of sales, and we want a third column that produces profit, we can just inject an expression into the select clause itself.
Mm.
But it doesn't work that way in cubes. It will only ever allow you to place valid members on the sets. So what this means is if we want to add calculations into our cube, we have to add calculated members to hierarchies and then introduce those members into the sets. There's an extra step required. So using the with keyword, we can preface the query by defining calculated members and indeed name sets. And let's explore both of them. So calculated members allow you to define members based on MDX expressions that can belong to any hierarchy within your cube. We can decorate those expressions using format, string, and colors. And they only exist while the query itself is running. So let's see an example of one here. And it sort of starts to look like it's complex. I really want to start with the select clause by saying that this query is bringing in three members from the measures dimension and placing them on the columns. That's our first set. And on the rows, we're asking for all salespeople. Go to the salesperson dimension, salesperson hierarchy, salesperson level, give me the members, put them on the rows from this cube, and where the date, calendar, year is this. Date dimension, calendar hierarchy, year level is this member. So the result at this point is saying, just give me all the salespeople, those measures for 2007. Now, we have this requirement to introduce sales variance. Okay, so because that's not a member in the cube itself, we use the with member to add it. And the as then is followed by the MDX expression. Sales amount minus sales amount quota, comma separate to introduce format string properties. And note the for color here is using an expression that says, if itself is less than zero, then return 255, which is the code for red. Zero is black.
Do the measures included in the as clause have to be part of your select?
Do the measures have to be part of the select? Yeah. No, they don't, but it doesn't make sense. If they're not used in your query, they can be placed in the where clause. Mm-hmm. So if that's where you're heading, yes, that could be the case. Okay. So that's why we see sales amount, amount quota. This is not a true measure from the cube. It was introduced artificially. That's not even the right word. Temporarily is the word for the duration of the query. And that's the way we introduce calculations. So a word has to be said here, because if you're expecting developers or even end users to do this, and it's a common requirement to analyze sales variance, then what we're going to explore in the next presentation is that this calculated member could become a permanent calculation of the cube and therefore available to all queries.
Probably a better way of implementing it. That way your business logic's locked in.
Correct. And we have consistency about the way we query what means sales variance. But this is how it's done at query level.
Right.
Now, it extends to sets as well that we place on the axes, is that we can define them using the with clause with a set known as the top five salespeople by sales as, and there's a valid set expression. And then you'll note that on my rows, I've introduced that name set, and then it functions as usual. Mm. It's not so common to do this. You would probably do this temporarily by introducing it with the query if you knew that set had to be evaluated multiple times in the same query, because you could define it once and then reference that name set multiple times. But if it's a common requirement for us to understand who the top five salespeople are, then again, this definition should be in the cube so that it can be queried consistently by the users. All right, just a point there. If you're looking to demystify these mind-destroying expressions, the step-by-step series is excellent for Microsoft Press. Really holds your hand very tightly and guides you through step-by-step the knowledge incrementally to build up what it takes to produce these types of queries. For those that really are looking for a more in-depth discussion about MDX, George Spofford's book here, MDX Solutions, will take you much, much deeper into it, but I do not recommend it as an introductory book.
There and I go. Guess, you know, that's a great introduction. You know, a lot of developers may wind up finding that they are writing MDX queries, and a lot of developers may not write a single one, but it's all they may use tools that generate MDX as part of their solution, right? But whether or not you're going to be writing MDX or generating it, it's a good idea to understand kind of how the query syntax operates and the fact that it's as flexible as it is.
Right, and definitely beyond that, if you're developing cubes, it's not necessarily a prerequisite, but you're likely to develop better and more optimized designs if you know how the query language works.
Yes, excellent. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you, Roger.
And we'll see you in the next presentation.